welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, featuring shows from radio's golden years. Mark Levonier, your host for an hour of crime stories. Later on, an audition program, it's crime correspondent. But first, the syndicated series, The Black Museum, with Orson Welles as host and curator. This episode released in 1952, called The Bedsheet.
This is Orson Welles, speaking from London. The Black Museum. Here, in the grim stone structure on the Thames, which houses Scotland Yard, is a warehouse of homicide. A warehouse where everyday objects, a tallow candle, for example, a mounted cat, an andiron, all are touched by murder.
From the annals of the Criminal Investigation Department of the London Police, we bring you the dramatic stories of the crimes recorded by the objects in Scotland Yard's Gallery of Death, the Black Museum.
Well, here we are, the Black Museum. Scotland Yard's very special, very particular museum of murder. If you're a student of criminology, a student with some imagination, I don't think you'll be alone here in the Black Museum. Each small card meant solely to identify crime and criminal will bring to life for you a sinister ghost, and you'll walk here attended simultaneously by killer and killed. Here's a long-necked chemist's flask. It was meant to hold life-giving medicine, but somebody intervened. There was acid in this flask. A few pellets dropped in, dissolved. The flask was smoky with lethal vapor. Sleeping man died. Here's a bicycle made for fun, but notice the wheels, the crumpled spokes, crushed tires. A girl rode this bike downhill, and a wire was stretched across the roadway. Ah, here we are, the sheet. Common everyday bed sheet stamped in one corner, SS Bengal Tower. That's a luxury liner on the route between Cape Town and Southampton. It's a nice ship and a voyage to enjoy, particularly when you're young and homeward bound. Natalie Parsons was young and homeward bound and very lovely. The first night out, there were two gentlemen friends to dance attendance.
Thank you, Miss Parsons. Well, you make even a lieutenant's life a pleasure.
Why, Lieutenant, I thought the Navy was the life for a young man with adventure in his soul.
Well, that's just the legend, but all legends come to an end. Just like the dancing tonight.
Mr. Morrow holding the fort at our table all alone. Let's be nice to him, Lieutenant. Hmm? I hear he knows the captain of our ship.
The dancing was over in the main salon. The orchestra retired for the night. High above the brilliantly illuminated decks on the dim, binnacle-lighted bridge, Captain Booth had his own thoughts as he paced away his watch.
Ought to be all right. Full passenger list, decent crew, engines in good shape. Ship all squared away, topside and below. You never know. That's the worry and the fascination of it. You never know.
No, Captain. You never know, do you? You never know. Ah, but such thoughts are ridiculous. Look at the three people at that table near the bar in the first-class lounge this minute. The Parsons girl. Actress, the passenger list says. The naval lieutenant. What is his name? Jeff Hennessy, that's it. And Noel Morrow. Past middle age, but quite distinguished. Heavy stockholder in the line which owns your Bengal Tower. Nice people having a fine time.
And this, gentleman, concludes our performance for this evening.
Oh, but it's early yet, Miss Parsons.
Well, I'm not used to the sea air, Lieutenant. I'm tired, so I'm going to bed. And thank you both for a lovely first night at sea.
May I see you to your cabin?
Hold on. I claim that privilege. You dance with her all evening, son. Now it's my turn.
Oh, don't fight, gentlemen. Well, not the first night out, anyway. I think we'll accede to Noel's wish tonight, Jeff.
Good.
He has some basis to his claim, you know.
There you are, young fellow.
Well, I surrender. There's plenty of time to Southampton. And lots of moonlight.
Yes, plenty of time for fun and enjoyment and even playing at love as the great ship knifes through the tropic seas northward, homeward bound. So Noel Morrow walks Natalie Parsons to a cabin and returns to the bar for a nightcap with Lieutenant Jeff Hennessy.
To Natalie, a nice girl.
I'll drink to that. A fine talent, I hear.
Yes, I saw in a play in Johannesburg, Three-Cornered Moon. Huh? Very amusing.
That's so. Well, I never heard of it. Still, I'm glad I heard of Natalie Parsons. Nice girl.
Good looking, too.
Yes, all of that and more. Well, here's to a pleasant voyage.
Two gentlemen converse over whiskey and soda, then repair to their respective quarters and fall asleep. 2 a.m. Four bells. On the bridge, the watch is changing.
First officer reporting relieving, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Forsyth. We're making 15 knots, course 348. All quite below.
Thank you, sir. I took the liberty of checking before I came topside. The watchmen are ringing their station, sir. Stewards and stewardesses turn in, sir.
Very well, mister. Take over. Carry on.
North-northeast, roughly, is the course. The ship moves on. The captain goes to his cabin. First Officer Forsyth and the quartermaster stand to on the bridge. All quiet. Below on B deck, the watchman makes his rounds.
That's a funny one. B-24 ringing for steward and stewardess both. We'll have a look.
What is it, man?
Is something wrong, sir?
Nothing's wrong, why?
Both your buzzers are ringing, sir. For your steward and stewardess both.
There must be a mistake. Everything here is fine.
The watchman is puzzled. He goes back. The buzzers have stopped. He checks the cabin list. B-24. Miss Natalie Parsons. He hesitates back to the cabin or up to the bridge. Was it a mistake? He chose the bridge.
What is it, Petering?
B-24, the ladies' cabin. A single occupied, Mr. Forsyth.
Is it now?
Buzzers was ringing. I answered. A man came to the door. All I did see of him was his trouser leg and shoe. Black, both of them.
Well, strange things can happen on shipboard on a cruise like this, you know. You just go on with your rounds and fill out your report when you go off watch.
Yes, sir. Very well, sir.
In a few moments, I'll go below and check. I want to make sure, meet me at B-24 at 5 bells.
Aye, aye, sir. Thank you, sir.
Strange things do happen on shipboard. Even without tropic seas and a voyage home, quite strange things. 5 bells. 2:30. First Officer Forsyth, with Watchman Petrie at his elbow, knocked discreetly on the door to B-24.
Unlocked, is it? Careless.
So it seems, sir.
Swing your torch in here, Petrie.
Aye, sir.
Nobody here. Cabin's empty. All right, Petrie. Make your report. I'll enter this on the log. We'll let it go at that. Girls will be girls, Petrie. I trust you haven't forgotten that.
Discreet fellow, that first officer, but then he'd had plenty of cruise experience. He noted the matter in the log. After all, he had left the bridge for a few moments. And that was all. Now, it happens that one of the duties of the first officer is to call the roll at boat drill. You know how that goes. The bells clang all over the ship. The passengers joke as they reach for life bells, dusty with disuse, and scramble to the boat deck at the stations noted on their cabin doors. And after a bit, the first officer comes around and checks the roll.
Yes, I know. I quite agree. Yeah. Answer to your names, please, ladies and gentlemen. This is a boat station for cabins B-18 to B-45. All passengers and crew assigned here will answer. Mr. Ainsville?
Here.
Alan Birch?
Here, sir.
Miss Lawrence?
Here.
Mr. Leary?
Present.
Nancy Meadows?
Yes, sir.
Major Norton?
Yeah.
Miss Parsons? Miss Parsons? Miss Parsons?
The first officer reported to Captain Booth. Captain Booth thought it might be courteous if Miss Parsons were under the weather to pay her a courtesy call. Captain knocked.
Empty. Strange. Stewardess? Stewardess!
Yes, sir? You wanted me, Captain?
I do. You see Miss Parsons this morning?
No, sir, I haven't. If
It's a little queer, rather.
How so?
Well, she wasn't at boat drill either, sir, and her night things are missing.
You laid them out last night, did you?
Yes, sir. Pretty things, too. Just right for her. But not a sign of them this morning, and stains all over the sheet.
How's that? Where?
Here, sir. Sort of red and a few black ones, sir. Streaks, like.
I see. Just a moment. There are times when I'm glad first-class cabins have telephones. This is the captain speaking. I want Dr. Stout in B-24 at once. Thank you.
You don't think something's happened, do you, sir? She's such a nice girl.
That's what everyone says. Funny goings-on in here last night. Watchman's report, the log. Notice anything else peculiar here this morning, stewardess?
Well, yes, sir. When I first came in to straighten up, first off, I noticed the porthole, sir. Swinging open it was, all by itself. I fastened it before anything, sir.
Yes, that's right.
You call for me, Captain?
Yes, Doctor. Take a look at the stains on that sheet, will you?
Right.
All right, stewardess, you can go, but stay on call.
Yes, sir, I'll be right outside.
And send in the watchman.
Yes, sir.
Well, Doctor?
These are probably lipstick. The other red spots, they look like blood, I'm afraid. I'll tell better after I've run a test. The black marks beat me.
Not a very pleasant prospect. Blood on the sheet and an open porthole.
Watchman Petrie, Captain.
Ah, yes. Don't go, Doctor. Now, see here, Petrie. This man you reported speaking to last night. Did you see his face?
Sorry, sir, I didn't. Only his trouser and one shoe, like I told Mr. Forsyth.
I see. It's too bad. What about his voice?
It was muffled, sir, by the door. But he did have, a kind of accent, sir.
What kind? American? Welsh? Scots? Irish?
If anything, it was Scotch, sir.
All right. Dismissed.
Thank you, sir.
Well, Doctor?
I don't like the looks of it. I'd seal this cabin and notify owners if I were you.
I'll do that and more. This is the captain. Hey, give me the bridge. Watch, officer, please. Hello, Mr. Matson. Captain Booth here. I want a complete search of the ship at once for a passenger. Natalie Parsons. Crow's nest a block hole. And put the ship about, mister. We're going back on a sea search as well. Calculate our position at 4 bells this morning. I'll be topside directly. We're not going to find her alive, you know, Doctor. But we've got to have a look.
I know.
If this girl went through that porthole alive, the sharks have got her by now. If she went through dead, we have a murderer aboard. As I said before, not a very pleasant prospect, Doctor.
No, it didn't look so pleasant. An empty cabin. An open porthole. And blood on the sheet. And I'd remind you that that sheet today can be seen in the Black Museum. There was no sign, of course, nothing aboard ship, nothing beyond but empty, heaving sea. Bengal Tower slowed at the position she'd sailed through the night before. She circled, while anxious eyes scanned the surface of the water. They saw nothing. Nothing but the sea. Then the captain said quietly,
"Engine room, all engines ahead, full speed."
"Aye, aye, sir."
And presently the wireless room crackled with the sound of a coded message.
"Master Bengal Tower to Indian Mail Steamship Company, Southampton. Advised disappearance early morning 18th, passenger Natalie Parsons, Cape Town to Southampton. Circumstances puzzling. Making all possible inquiries. Inform Southampton CID. Will report further development. Signed, Booth."
Back in his quarters, Captain Booth sent for the two men last known to have seen the missing girl.
"Sit down, gentlemen. May I offer you a drink?"
"No, thank you.
I assume you know that Miss Parsons is presumed lost at sea."
"Tragic. Lovely girl. Great talent." "The
ship is buzzing with it, sir. Why should a girl like that, with a whole world before her, commit suicide?"
"Why, indeed, Lieutenant. That's one reason I asked you here. Did either of you gentlemen notice any signs of depression about her that evening?"
"Why, everything seemed to indicate the exact contrary. Don't you agree, Hennessy?"
Absolutely. We danced almost every dance. She was as happy as anybody could be. She did get tired. Mr. Morrow took her below."
"To her cabin, Mr. Morrow?"
"Yes. We said goodnight at the door, and I rejoined the lieutenant for a nightcap."
"I see. And neither of you gentlemen have anything to add, have you, gentlemen?"
Neither of them did. But in Southampton, the Criminal Investigation Department did have a few items to add.
All right, Hobson. What's the report on this Parsons girl?
Well, exactly what she said she was, Inspector. Actress.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently quite well accepted in Joburg. Plenty of men at the stage door, so to speak. Uh-huh. Age 25. Never a touch of scandal. 2 points.
Yes.
She was in the Army Intelligence during the war. Had languages. Good actress. Quite a help.
Oh, possibly in Secret Service nowadays.
No, I called the special branch on that. Positively no. She's back in civil life completely.
Oh, well, that's a possible theory down the drain.
Yes, sir.
Well, you had 2 points, Sergeant.
Yes, sir. The other is, she said she left Joburg for a theatre job here. Well, there's no sign of it, sir. No manager in England has signed her, though some of them knew the name.
Ah, we'll keep after that. Oh, how about the passenger and crew list? Anyone familiar?
No, not a criminal record in the lot. And we've checked all 368 of them.
All right, Sergeant. We'll keep after that theatre job angle. Meanwhile, alert the technicians and the harbour police. We'll be going aboard that ship before the pilot takes her over.
The ship with the sealed cabin drew nearer to home. Somehow the festive quality of a voyage home was missing. Tension settled over the Bengal Tower, from the bridge to the boiler room. At long, long last, the anchor dropped into Southampton water. The passengers gathered to watch for the pilot boat.
That's no pilot boat, is it, Halsey?
Police launch.
I expected as much.
Funny. You dance with a girl, you know her for 8, 10 hours out of your life. She stays with you.
It happens, son. She was a lovely thing. Don't fall in love with a ghost. Wind up rather lonely, you know.
Thanks. I'll remember that. Quite a few of them coming aboard.
Yes, we're in for a going over, apparently.
The captain spoke to the passengers and crew over the public address system.
Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, representatives of the Southampton police have come aboard to proceed with the necessary inquiry into the tragic disappearance of one of our fellow passengers. Until this inquiry has run its course, it'll be necessary to lie off and not to proceed ashore. Your cooperation will be greatly appreciated, and I'm sure you realize that all which can be done is being done to place you ashore as soon as possible. Thank you.
I wish them luck. How I wish them luck.
On B-deck, Inspector Rice took over from a greatly relieved Captain Booth. No time was wasted.
Set up a lab in the ship's pharmacy. Get at those stains. Compare them with the girl's lipstick and get the blood type. And find out what's in those black markings.
Yes, sir.
Now strip the bed and go through her things top to bottom. Now, I want to talk to the watchman, the stewardess. And from what you say, Captain, the man in here that night had a Scots accent.
That's correct.
Well, how many Scotsmen aboard? Have you checked that?
We have. 26, Inspector. 18 passengers, 8 in the crew.
Oh, very good, sir. You have been thorough. Now, you, I take it, are the watchmen.
They work quickly, but they work thoroughly. The watchman and the stewardesses reasserted their statements to the captain with one addition.
Oh, yes, sir. I cleaned the cabin thoroughly. Wiped everything.
That was too bad. No chance now for fingerprints. In the improvised laboratory in the ship's pharmacy, they did better.
The lipstick stains match the lipstick in her luggage exactly, sir.
The blood type on that spotted sheet?
Type O, sir. The girl's army record gives the same type.
Meanwhile, information arrived from ashore.
She had a job waiting for her, Inspector, at the Abbey Theatre in Dublin, sir.
And then the police chemist came up with a long-awaited answer.
The black streaks on the sheet, sir. Lamp black wax and petroleum oil. That's shoe polish. But there's a trace of silver polish mixed in, sir.
Ah, now we've got something, Hobson.
Yes, sir, but what?
Well, who'd get silver polish on his boots aboard ship, Sergeant?
Well, it's a weird combination, sir.
A ship steward, Hobson. A steward with a Scots accent. Now, let's see the captain, shall we?
I'll cooperate in any way I can, Inspector. But even if it is one of my men, there's not a thing to tie any of them to the incident.
Well, sir, I have an idea. We can let the passengers ashore now, but hold the crew. Then you invite the police detail and the ship's officers to luncheon. Set up 4 tables well apart, waited on by the 4 stewards you say are Scots-born. At the end of the meal... Thank you, steward. I will have some more coffee. Now, as I was saying, gentlemen, it's practically over. That one fingerprint on the glass of the porthole will hang the man. No question about it. They always forget something, make at least one silly mistake. There'll be a ship's mechanic from our harbor police aboard any minute.
All right, young fella. You can stop polishing that porto cover now.
What's the meaning of this? I'm doing my job.
There's no fingerprint on the glass. You fell for the inspector's plan. I'll have to take you in charge. Willful murder on suspicion. And I must warn you, anything you say may be taken down in writing.
They smoked him out all right, but he refused to give in without a struggle. It was interesting to watch his mind work as they questioned him.
You're Alan Birch.
I am.
Your first trip aboard the Bengal Tower?
Round trip. Went out in her. This is the return.
Like the ladies, do you?
They seem to like me.
Ever had any trouble with one before?
No, never. What do you mean, before?
Your forearms, Birch, and your neck, all scratched.
No dame ever scratched me.
Well, where did you get them, then?
Ship's cat. I tried to pet her. She let me have it.
It won't wash, Birch. No cat's claws ever scratched like that. Ship's doctor will certify to that. And those scratches aren't old enough to have happened ashore.
All right, then. It was a woman.
Huh?
A stewardess.
Which one?
I'm not saying. She'd lose her job.
Nonsense. Who are you protecting, Birch?
Nobody.
Stop it, Birch. You're only making it harder for yourself. You were on duty for that cabin, among others. She rang. From the watchman's story, the buzzer was stuck. But you didn't realize it until he knocked on the door and spoke to you. You went to B-24, forced your way in, attacked the girl, and when she resisted, you killed her and pushed her through that porthole. Wasn't that the way it was, Birch?
I never attacked nobody.
We say you did. There's blood on the sheet. Her blood. We'll find it on your clothes, too.
I never attacked her. We had a date. After she ditched the two jokers she was dancing and drinking with.
Be careful what you say, Birch. It's all being taken down and may be used in evidence.
I'm telling the truth. I didn't kill her. I was waiting in the cabin, like she said. When she came in, she changed her mind or something. She tried to push me out. I don't take that from no woman. I grabbed her. She fell against me. She was foaming at the mouth in a sort of fit. She collapsed. I put her on the bed, tried to give her artificial respiration. That's how the black got on the sheet, maybe.
Yeah, probably. Go on, Bert.
When that fool Petrie came to the door, I lost my head. She looked dead. I didn't know what. I locked the door. I couldn't find no heartbeat. Nothing. I figured Petrie would report to the bridge. I picked her up and pushed her out of the porthole.
Why did you decide to tell this tale, Birch?
Because you'd pin it on me anyway. I know coppers. So better than have yous cook it up, you got it my way. I didn't kill nobody here. I didn't kill nobody.
Stanley Birch had told his story. Not a very good story. For there in contradiction was the testimony and evidence, including that blood-stained bedsheet, which you can see today in the Black Museum.
Orson Welles will be back with you in just a moment.
Stuart Birch was a ladies' man. There was no doubt about that after the evidence was in. The jury had little doubt either. They convicted Mr. Birch of first-degree murder, despite his protestations, and despite the fact that for the first time in 200 years, a jury had been given a homicide case without a corpus delicti. This was a major aspect of the case, a very interesting one, I think. And further, just after the conviction, the House of Commons suspended the death penalty in England. As for Stuart Birch, you'll find him spending the rest of his natural life in Dartmoor Prison. And as for the spotted bedsheet, it remains in its customary place. In Scotland Yard, in the Black Museum. And now, until we meet next time, the same place, I tell you another story about the Black Museum. I remain, as always, obediently yours.
The Black Museum, Untuned to Yesterday, a syndicated recording from 1952. You're listening to An Hour of Crime, Untuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up next, an audition of a program released for network consideration that did not come to pass, though it wasn't the fault of the very capable director, Gordon T. Hughes, who in the very same year as this release was directing episodes of The Whistler, Broadway Is My Beat, and yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This episode called The Chair for Dino, from November 4th, 1949, on CBS.
Time. Time for your crime correspondent.
Good evening, citizens. This is Larry Mitchell with the latest news of the world. The Underworld Bulletin. Los Angeles, California. Police tonight were close to the solution of the lurid Black Dahlia killing. After several hours of intensive grilling, Harry Forbes, 28, broke down and admitted he had known Elizabeth Short.
The Columbia Broadcasting System presents Crime Correspondent, starring Paul Frees as Larry Mitchell. Police broke up attempted tavern robbery tonight, but a running gun battle ensued in which two policemen were wounded and one bandit was killed. To Officer Ryan, we say, good shooting. Exclusive. Now, it can be told. The dramatic inside story, which I call The Chair for Dino. You saw it in your morning paper, citizen. Read the story of cop killer Dino Cerotti, who barricaded himself in a rooming house on East Lancey Street last night. Kept the police of your city at bay for almost 2 hours. Yes, it was there in your morning paper. And on page one, you saw the photograph. You saw the figure of a man sprawled out on the front steps. He was Sergeant Frank Vixen of your police department, who died by a killer's gun. And here, by tape recorder, is how he died, as told to your crime correspondent by the witnesses. First, Mrs. Dillon, the landlady.
Well, it was a few minutes after 8 when the two police officers came to the house and asked about Mr. Cerotti. He must have heard them because suddenly he opened his door and started shooting. The officer standing next to me, Sergeant Vixen, staggered and stumbled out the front door and fell down the steps. Right away, I knew he was dead.
And so, dear citizens, death came to Sergeant Frank Vixen on the steps of an old brownstone house at 721 East Lancey Street. Death on a quiet Saturday night. Exactly 1 hour, 55 minutes later, Lieutenant Steve McCoy of your police department had this story to tell.
When Detective Williams, Bernstein, and I started running for the house, we expected Cerotti to start shooting again. Excuse me. But he didn't. After we worked our way inside the house and up to the front room where he was, we found him slumped over in a chair. The gun in his hand, there was a bullet hole in his right temple. He was dead.
Yes, Dino Cerotti, cop killer, was dead. Dead by his own hand. And up and down the street, the citizens of East Lancey breathed a sigh of relief. Happy a citizen was one Charlie Simmons, who'd been trapped in the rooming house with killer Cerotti through it all.
I was taking a nap in my room here when I heard the shooting. I went out in the hall to see what was going on. That's when I saw Cerotti with a gun. I ducked back into my room and locked the door. And I stayed there until the cops came. Oh, boy, am I sure glad it's over.
Yes, it was over, ladies and gentlemen. Over for Charlie Simmons, who'd been trapped in the rooming house. Over for Dino Cerotti, cop killer, who was dead. Over for the citizens of East Lancey Street. Ladies and gentlemen, it was not over. Because all the facts were not there in your morning paper. There was more to the death of Dino Cerotti. There were other facts your police department would not, could not reveal. And here are those facts, reported exclusively here. Yes, now it can be told. When the peace and quiet of East Lancey Street had been restored, the body of Dino Cerotti delivered to the morgue, there was one question on everybody's mind. Why? Why had the police come to Mrs. Dillon's boarding house in the first place? What had they wanted with Dino Cerotti? Well, that question was on my mind, too, last night when I dropped around police headquarters. I was certain Lieutenant McCoy could give me the answer.
Look, Mitchell, I've already told this to every reporter in town. We only wanted to ask Cerruti some questions.
Like what?
I can't go into that. Now run along like a good boy, huh? I got things to do.
Oh, come on, McCoy. Break down.
Cerruti was wanted for questioning. Let it go at that.
Kind of touchy tonight, McCoy. Your ulcers again?
Beat it, will you?
Okay, okay. Oh, who's Joshua Spear?
Spear? How'd you know about Joshua Spear?
Surprise? My leg man, Jeff Hayes, collared him down at the morgue half hour ago. He got his name before you boys whisked him inside. Maybe Spear went in to take a look at Cerruti, huh?
Maybe.
Friend? Relative?
Call it morbid curiosity.
Look, McCoy, what's going on? What's all this hocus-pocus? Who's Joshua Spear? What's he to Dino Cerruti?
Why don't you go back to the morgue? Maybe the boys there will tell you.
Only you don't think they will, huh? Okay, McCoy, I'll give it another try. See you later. Well, Jeff, Spear's still inside the morgue?
I don't think so. Got a hunch the cops slipped him out the back way. How'd you make out with McCoy?
I didn't. Oh, did you look up Joshua Spear in the phone book?
Yeah, sure. Here's the number. But Larry, what's all this runaround we're getting?
Maybe I'll tell you after I call this number.
I'll get it. Hang around the morgue all day, look up a guy's number. Maybe he knows what he's doing. I don't know.
Hello?
Mrs. Spear?
Yes?
This is an old friend of your husband's. Just got into town. I thought I'd look him up.
Well, I'm sorry. He isn't in just now.
Oh, that's too bad. Say, how's he doing with his bakery?
Bakery? I'm afraid you've made a mistake. My husband works for the Fallon Construction Company.
Hello? Mrs. Spear?
Who is this? Hello? Hello, who is this?
What happened?
Lieutenant McCoy was out there. He grabbed the phone from Mrs. Spear.
McCoy? Say, what are the cops up to anyways?
Maybe Mrs. Spear said something she shouldn't have.
Yeah, like what?
Ever hear of the Fallon Construction Company?
Well, sure. They're building that new cutoff, the tunnel road up. Hey, wait a minute.
Yeah, two nights ago, somebody broke into the storage sheds, tied up the night watchman.
A guy named Spear, that's right. Spear was the night watchman.
And now the cops bring in Spear to have a look at Cerruti. Why?
You think Cerruti is the guy who broke into the storage sheds?
Could be, Jeff. Come on, let's get back to Mrs. Dillon's boarding house. She might have something interesting to tell us.
Well, I can't say I ever really felt at ease, you know, with the lack of Cerruti in my house. There was something about him that, well, gave me the creeps.
Are you sure, Mrs. Dillon, that you didn't see Cerruti leave the house night before last?
No, I didn't. But I did see him go out tonight. Oh, well, it was around 6, just getting dark. Had 2 suitcases with him.
Huh?
Oh, I was so relieved. I didn't even ask him for the rent. He owed me a day, you know. But I didn't care. I was so glad he was checking out. As it turned out, he wasn't checking out. Came back about an hour later and stayed in his room. Then around 8, the police showed up.
About the suitcases, Mrs. Dillon. Did he...
He didn't have them with him when he returned.
I see.
I don't know what he was doing with those suitcases. All his clothes are still in the room. Now I ask you, Mr. Mitchell, what am I supposed to do with these things? And who's going to pay for my chair? It's ruined, you know, completely ruined.
Hmm? What was that, Miss Stone?
Well, my chair, the one Cerruti was sitting in when he killed himself, covered with bloodstains. It's no good to me.
Oh, yes, good. Well, thank you, Mrs. Dillon.
Are you leaving?
Sorry to rush off like this. I suddenly remember I have some business to take care of down at police headquarters.
That's what I said, Rourke. Get every squad car in that neighborhood on it right away. We haven't got all night. Well, you back again?
You find the TNT yet, Lieutenant?
What did you say?
I said you find the TNT. You know, the stuff Cerruti swiped from the Fallon Construction Company night before last.
I don't know what you're talking about, Mitchell.
Let me try this on you for size, McCoy. You had Joshua Spear brought down here to see if he could identify Cerruti as the guy who broke into the sheds of the construction company the other night, right?
Go on, smart boy.
Cerruti was the guy, wasn't he? Sure, maybe you had a hunch, a lead on Cerruti. So that's why you send a couple of your boys around to Mrs. Dillon's rooming house. That's when the shooting happened.
You're in a weed field, Mitchell.
What happened after that, we can all read about in the papers, can't we, McCoy? Except there's one little item you didn't mention to the press. You didn't tell us about the TNT. You didn't find it in Cerruti's room, did you?
You're raving.
I don't think so. I think it'll make a great story. See you around, Lieutenant.
Wait a minute. Come back here.
All right. Let's have it. Why did he steal that TNT, McCoy?
I don't know. But there's one thing I do know, Mitchell. If you let that story out, I'll see to it personally that you never get near another microphone as long as you live.
Oh, Lieutenant, do you think I'm that stupid?
If that story gets out, we'll have the biggest panic on our hands this town has ever seen.
So Cerruti did plant the stuff somewhere?
Yeah. Here. Take a look at this. We found this piece of paper in Cerruti's hand.
You'll be hearing from me again, Coppers. Too bad you'll never find it in time. McCoy, does this mean...
Yeah. Somewhere in this town, there's a time bomb, Mitchell, ready to go. We don't know how soon or where it is. It's ticking off right now, and there's enough TNT in that bomb to blow up an entire city block.
Hey, isn't that somebody sitting there on the steps?
Yeah, Charlie Simmons, the guy who was trapped in the building with Cerruti.
If I was him, I wouldn't be sitting on my room and house steps. I'd be out getting drunk.
Wait for me, Jeff. Oh, and Jeff, if I leave here without you...
Sure, I know. I'll follow you.
Right. Hi, Charlie.
Huh? Oh, Mr. Mitchell. Didn't recognize you for a minute.
How you feeling?
Still a little shaky. I've been thinking I ought to go out and get drunk.
I don't blame you. That was quite an experience you had.
If it never happens again, it'll be too soon.
Yeah. Oh, is Mrs. Dillon in?
She went out. Be back soon, though. Why don't you wait?
Oh, thanks. By the way, I understand that Cerruti wasn't much of a mixer, was he?
That's right. It wasn't a friendly sort. Yeah, the rumors here stayed away from him.
Didn't you?
No. Maybe it was because I felt sorry for the little guy. He really wasn't so bad. Sure, he acted kind of crazy at times. Once you got to talk to him and found out what made him tick, he wasn't such a screwball. He was smart.
You get to know him pretty well?
I didn't say that, Mr. Mitchell. I don't think anybody could ever get to know Cerruti real well. I guess he had a mad on. Somebody must have done him a bad turn once, I guess.
He didn't happen to mention who it was, did he?
Nope. The police asked the same thing. Yeah, I couldn't remember him ever mentioning anyone by name. So what's going on? The law seems mighty interested in Cerruti.
The law is, Charlie.
Yeah. I was getting a little chilly here. Let's go back to my room if you want to wait for Mrs. Dillon.
Oh, all right.
Police sure are busy tonight, ain't they?
It sure sounds that way.
Go ahead, Mr. Mitchell, after you. It's way back at the end of the hall.
Oh, thanks, Charlie.
I'll turn on the light. Yeah. There we are. Well, make yourself at home, Mr. Mitchell. Sit down. Here, move that chair.
Oh, this is fine.
I'd offer you a little snort, only I don't have any stuff around. And Mrs. Dillon don't like for rumors to have liquor on the premises. One reason, I guess, why she didn't take my sister Rhody. Hey, you listening?
Oh, what'd you say?
Mrs. Dillon didn't take to Cerruti much. Doesn't like drinkers, you know, and Cerruti always had a bottle in his room. Guess he drank to forget his troubles. You know, it seemed to me like it made him worse instead. Like a week ago when I ran into him on the street. He was plastered.
Loosen his tongue, any?
A little. He was griping about how he'd been given the fast shuffle. First, I thought he was talking about the girl.
Girl? What girl?
The one in the nightclub.
What nightclub?
Well, the one he came out of when I ran into him. Say, that's something I forgot to tell the police. Well, slipped my mind completely. I knew there was something.
Charlie, what about this girl? Who is she?
A friend of his, he said. Worked there. A cigarette girl, I think. I can't remember her name.
Where is this nightclub?
Let me see now. It seems like it was... back a few blocks near 54th, I think.
Charlie, could you find it again?
Oh, I suppose so. Say, I hit on something important?
You certainly did. Come on, Charlie, the drinks are on me.
Well. You look like a couple of friendly characters. Let's say we'll have a little drink, huh?
Someone you know, Charlie?
Never saw him before.
Oh, now that's no
way. Sorry, pal, we're talking business. You mind?
Oh, all right. If you want to be unfriendly, I can take a hint.
Yeah, shove off.
I'll get as far away as possible. Way down at the end of this bar. Bartender, scotch, double.
Is that character bothering you?
No, he's all right. Say, bartender, I don't see the cigarette girl around.
That's right, you don't. She quit a couple hours ago.
What?
She's entitled to quit if she wants to, ain't she?
Oh, all right. Where'd she live?
I wouldn't know.
Come on, barkeep. You can remember if you tried real hard, huh?
Put your money away, Buster. I don't know where she lives. And leave her alone. She's a nice kid. You still want the scotch?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Hey, Gus. Gus, take care of the two gents there at the end of the bar, will you? Teachers and water. I gotta make a phone call.
Okay, Vic.
Well, you get the phone number, Jeff?
Sure. Sure, how could I miss with that bartender dialing the phone right under my nose? Hey, here it is.
That was a good act you put on. Okay, let's go.
Yes?
Hello?
Do I know you?
No. I'm just curious about a guy called Cerruti.
You police?
Just a reporter, Larry Mitchell.
Oh. Look, I don't know anything about...
Sure you do.
I'll get out of here. I don't want to get mixed up in this.
You won't if you'll answer a few questions and fast.
I'll tell you anything you want to know, only you've got to keep me out of this.
Was he your boyfriend?
No, but he kept coming around to the club bothering me. He wouldn't leave me alone. We used to go around together back east years ago, before I got married.
Oh, married?
Yeah, my husband's been overseas. He's coming back in a week. Look, I don't want to get mixed up in anything.
Okay, relax. Cerruti carried a big fat grudge around with him. He was good and sore at somebody. Who was it?
A grudge? Oh, sure. Sure, that'd be a man named Malcolm. Yeah. J.V. Malcolm.
J.V. Malcolm Wholesale Drugs?
Yeah. It was something that happened several years back east. Dino said the company had gypped him.
Wait a minute. This doesn't add up. Malcolm lives in New York, doesn't he?
No, he and his family moved out here a week ago.
Oh, this is it. You sure?
Yeah. Dino told me a couple of nights ago. They're living out on River Road.
That's all I wanted to know, honey. I hope you're telling me the truth.
Oh, I am.
All right.
Mr. Mitchell, you promised you wouldn't involve me.
Yeah. You know something, honey? I've already forgotten your name. Good night.
Good night.
Yes, sir?
The name's Larry Mitchell. I have to see Mr. Malcolm right away.
Well, I'm sorry, but Mr. Malcolm's in conference.
At this time of night, cut it out.
Well, I'm Mr. Malcolm's general manager. Perhaps I can...
Look, you won't be for long if you don't clear out of this house.
See here, is this some sort of a joke?
Ever hear of a guy called Cerruti?
Cerruti? Why, no... Hey, what's going on out there? Those cars pulling into the driveway.
The police. I called them 10 minutes ago. I've got a good hunch there's a load of TNT somewhere in this house, and we're going to find it before it finds us.
TNT? Great Scott. Come along, Mr. Mitchell. Mr. Malcolm's in the library, executive board meeting. Mr. Malcolm's selling his interests, retiring.
All the big shots of Malcolm drugs collected under one roof, huh? That figures. Perfect setup for a guy with a grudge. Cerruti had it all figured out.
Who is this Cerruti?
It's a long story, Mr. Gargan. Let's get everybody out of this house first. I'll fill you in on details later. Any luck on your side of the house, Jeff?
Not a thing, Larry, no.
Oh, what time is it?
1 o'clock. And that bomb isn't going to wait forever.
It's got to be around here, somewhere.
Look, the cops have been all over the house half dozen times.
Hey, Mitchell!
Uh-oh, here comes the chief of police, and he doesn't look happy.
Well, Mitchell, you got any more bright ideas?
Oh, now look, Connelly.
You and your hot tip. We've wasted enough time around here. We're pulling out right now.
Oh, but chief...
If you think the bomb is in there, hop to it. You'll have the whole house to yourself. Okay, boys, let's roll.
Come on, Larry. Let's get back to town, huh?
Yeah, sure.
The car's right over here. Huh? Where to now?
We're not licked yet, Jeff. We better see if we can locate McCoy. Want to find out if we made any headway with that tip I gave him.
Larry, you think there's really something to that... Hey.
What?
Hey, isn't that somebody sitting in our car?
It looks like a girl.
Hi. How about a ride back into town? In the excitement, the others went off and left me.
Others?
I'm Judy Carson, just one of the Malcolm office slaves. We came out for the conference. Well, do I get a lift? I live on 76th Street off Shelby.
Yeah, sure, it's all right. All right, get in, Jeff.
The whole thing sort of turned out to be a big fat dud, didn't it?
Hey, look, honey, don't rub it in, huh?
Did I say something wrong? I'm sorry.
Okay, Jeff, let's go.
That's my apartment house up ahead.
Okay.
You two boys always is talkative.
Oh, we got problems, honey, and not much time to solve.
Well, thanks for the lift anyway.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. There's the boyfriend.
What?
Sitting in his car up ahead. He's going to be a little disturbed, I'm afraid.
Had to break a date, huh?
No, but I told him to pick me up tonight at the warehouse. That's where the meeting was going to be, but Mr. Gargan changed his mind. Decided at the last minute would be nicer to get together at the Malcolm estate.
Well, I'm sure your boyfriend will understand. Good night.
Night. Thanks again.
Oh. All right, Jeff. Let's get...
What's the matter?
Wait a minute.
Huh?
Did she say the meeting was scheduled to be held at the warehouse and the plans were changed at the last minute?
Yeah, that's right. She... Uh-oh.
Yeah. Come on, Jeff. Get this thing rolling. Let's get to that warehouse.
Okay, Larry, so here's the warehouse. How do we get in?
There's a window over here. Must be the office. Come on. Let's have a look. Give me the flashlight, Jeff.
See anything in there?
Yeah. Yeah. Take a look. There in the center of the floor.
Let me see. Uh-oh. Two suitcases.
Uh-huh. That's what we've been looking for.
We better break in this window.
That won't be necessary, gentlemen.
Hey, what...
The office door is open. Let's all go inside.
Well, Mr. Gargan.
Mr. Mitchell.
Jeff, the man with the gun is Mr. Malcolm's general manager.
Well, that's fine.
Shall we go inside, gentlemen? Go on. Go right on through. Into the warehouse.
Anything you say, Gargan.
Too bad you got here so soon, Mitchell. I'm afraid you'll have to be detained for good.
Sounds ominous.
What's that mean?
You've been just a little too clever for your own good, Mitchell. Now, that's far enough. We'll stop here.
Yeah, it's beginning to add up, Gargan. Malcolm and his bigwigs weren't scheduled for the big blow after all, were they?
You figured that out, have you?
Sure. You knew the meeting place had been changed. You changed it. You could have had the TNT moved over to the Malcolm estate, but you didn't.
Go on.
So it was the warehouse you were after. Insurance? No, that wouldn't be it. Maybe, covering up something, huh, Mr. Gargan?
You're quite good at these things, aren't you, Mitchell?
My batting average isn't bad. Oh, company, Mr. Gargan.
Open those doors behind you, quickly.
All right, come on, Jeff. Let's do as the man says.
Yeah. Larry. Larry, you see who's driving that truck?
Yeah, Charlie Simmons. Hello, Charlie.
Hello, Mitchell.
You know, Charlie, I figured you were in on this somehow.
Did you, smart boy?
I knew you were the minute you left your room tonight, when you took me over to that bar.
That's so?
You wanted me to find that cigarette girl, didn't you? But you were certain I wouldn't reach her until after the explosion. Then when she talked, Cerruti would be blamed for everything. Would have to do with his grudge against Malcolm.
He sure is clever, ain't he, Gargan?
Only a little scheme backfired. I found the girl too soon. That was a break for me.
All right, let's cut out the talk.
This has been going on for quite some time, huh, Gargan? Lifting stuff out of Malcolm's warehouse?
I said cut out the talk.
So now you need a cover-up. Maybe with Malcolm suddenly retiring, there was going to be an inventory, huh? You couldn't let that happen.
You are crazy.
The warehouse had to be destroyed completely. You couldn't trust a fire to do that.
You know something, Mitchell? You and your little friend here... I'm gonna go up with it.
I don't think so.
Stop it! Look out, McCoy! All right, hold it, Charlie. You're not going anywhere.
That's a pretty good lift you have, Mitchell.
Thanks, McCoy. Thanks for showing up.
Don't mention it.
Look, are we gonna stand around here, Gavin? What about those suitcases back there?
Relax, Jeff. I've already taken care of them.
What?
Before Charlie and Gargan arrive.
Oh.
Okay, Charlie, on your feet. You're not hurt.
Let go of me.
Looks like your tip paid off, Mitchell. I've been tagging Simmons ever since I got your lead. Took a look at his room.
What are you talking about?
You overlooked something, Charlie, when you killed Cerruti.
What?
You did kill him, didn't you, Charlie? Maybe Cerruti got panicky, wanted to give himself up. You were afraid he'd spill everything to the police.
You're crazy. He shot himself.
No, you shot him in your room.
My room? Look, the cops found him in his room.
That's right, only because you moved him there. You had to move the chair, too, because it was covered with blood. You didn't want anyone to find it in your room.
So you just switched chairs, Simmons, took the one in Cerruti's room and brought it back to your own.
You didn't think anybody would notice the switch of chairs because all of them in the boarding house are exactly alike.
You're crazy.
There was one thing you didn't notice, Charlie. There was a small hole, a bullet hole, in the back of the chair you took from Cerruti's room.
What?
That's right. And when I spotted it in your room, I wondered how it got there. With a gun battle raging at the front of the house, how could a bullet have lodged itself into a chair in your room at the rear of the house? But don't worry, Charlie. You'll get your chair. A hot one. Yes, citizens, it all began with the death of a police sergeant on the steps of a rooming house on East Lancy Street. Ended just a few minutes before your crime correspondent came on the air tonight. The late word from police headquarters... Charlie Simmons has confessed to the murder of Dino Cerruti. And there it is, citizens, the exclusive story. Yes, and society gladly accepts the resignation of members Gargan, Simmons, Cerruti, mourns the loss of gallant police officer Frank Vixen, who lived in your service, died for your protection.
Crime correspondent on Tuned to Yesterday, an audition recording from November 4th, 1949 from CBS. And that wraps up this hour of Crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.